All right. Hey, guys. I'm so excited to have Jarrett Thomas here today. My name is Danny Dumas, and this is the Earn Your Title podcast. Today, we're going to talk about coaching and how, you know, the actually getting your kids into sports, but maybe on a bigger end, how to get your kids coached in life, because I think that skill of coaching is huge. So, Jarrett, why don't you start telling me a little bit about yourself, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. First off, Danny, obviously, thanks for having me. Privilege to speak with you. This is a topic I'm very passionate about. Obviously, being in coaching, coaching basketball for the last 13 years, high school basketball, travel basketball, and getting to work with hundreds of students and their parents. So,
awesome. So, my first question, maybe the problem I have is, you know, I've got three kids and they're all play sports on different levels, and I have a desire for them, let's say, to play at the highest level. And would you say, like, right now where we're at, high school basketball is the highest level, or would you say it's travel? Where does that fall right now?
Yeah. Well, for basketball, I think there's a couple of levels. So let's look at other sports, maybe soccer. I know a lot of kids will not play for their high school soccer team because their club team is just elite.
Right.
And that is an accepted thing. With basketball, the best athletes will play for their high school. So high school basketball is still a really respected and coveted thing here in Michigan.
Yeah. And you coached a high school that went as far as they've ever gone, right? Last year, you guys, where did you go last year?
So we went to quarterfinals last year. So that essentially, I think, you get down to eight teams in the state playoffs. So at our school, Rochester Adams, it's a Division I school. We have about 1,600 students. So we are a small Division I school. I think the biggest enrollments are closer to 3,000 students. And that's a type of team we played in the Elite Eight or the quarterfinals, Grand Blanc High School. They have one of the largest enrollments in the state, and they're really good. And for us to compete at that level was something that very proud of it. A lot of work, a lot of things that also just kind of go your way. We hit a three-pointer in the districts to win at the buzzer. So, you know, we're very thankful to be there, and to make history for our school is fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I've got younger kids. Let's say I've got a 10-year-old, and he or she is showing promise towards, we'll talk about basketball day because that's what you're an expert at. What is the roadmap to get them to playing at your level in hopes that maybe they can get something else in the future, a scholarship? So what do you think is the best way to prepare that 10-year-old and, you know, in 5 years when he's 15 to, you know, getting on a varsity team or maybe a JV? What's that roadmap look like for you?
Yeah. You know, I definitely want to speak more broad terms, so even those who aren't in basketball can find some value in this, because I think in my experience and the things I've experienced, I've seen athletes who are multi-sport athletes who've done different sports, and there does seem to me to be some keys to success, I will say, for parents, and some things that I'd say, oh, you know, that's great, and some other things say, oh, man. You know, I feel bad for those kids who have to endure that. But so just speaking, like, there's two parallels in parenting of high school athletes and even at the youth levels. I mean, I have kids come to our youth camps as early as third grade and second grade, and their parents will be really critical. So I don't know what was wrong with them today. They just weren't any good today. You know, really critical even at young ages. So there's two parallels. One is this highly pressurized home environment. And then the other side of that is where there's no support at all in the home environment. And it is difficult to say which one is better or preferred to achieve these type of results you're speaking of. So actually, my belief is it is more important for a parent to believe in their child than it is for them to have any success on the court or playing field. And I wanted to start there. So, and you know, I'd say, you know, believe in your kid. Hold them to a high standard as a human being. So that would mean whether they become a superstar or whether they walk away from the sport completely and say, this sport is not for me. They'll remember how you made them feel,
right,
and your expressed or unexpressed belief in them, because eventually they're going to find that thing that is for them. Right. And the work ethic and the values gained along the way, they will pay off. So I would say, as a parent, you want your kid to be great in a sport. I'd say you have no control of that. You can get them the training. Right. You can show them a blueprint for work ethic and whatnot. But I want you to think, if the worst case scenario is your kid is not a great athlete, but he learns tangible life skills and knows that his parent has even an irrational, and maybe it's irrational, but an unwavering belief in them, I think you have something really special, because they'll eventually, like I said, they may walk away from the sport, but eventually in life, they're going to find that thing they're great at. And they'll point back to the work ethic, the experiences. But as a parent, you know, that's just something I can't express enough. What I see from my athletes, them knowing that their parent has a unwavering belief in them is something really special. So I would start there. You know, do you believe in your kid, regardless of the scoreboard, the stat sheet? Do you have a belief that he can get better or she can get better? That's something I'd like to definitely talk about.
Do you see that actually playing out? Like, you have your starters, are most of their parents believers?
You know, I can always point.
I understand you're currently coaching Avian. Yeah. So you don't have to use specifics, but would you say, man, this guy's successful? And I see it in his life. I see that he was set up by his parents, that, you know, that there was maybe some expectations, but not force. There was some goals, but not demands. You know, how do you see that play out in actual guys that get to your level?
Yeah, I think I've seen many examples of that throughout my coaching. You know, I see kids who they walk into the gym and you can almost feel the pressure of home and the pressure of mom or dad, whoever it may be. Sometimes it's not always dad. Sometimes it's mom. Truly. And then I see examples of kids who are able to play so freely and with such confidence because they know that their parents, you know, when I say love, I want to say love in the sense of giving praise or acceptance, yeah, not in the sense of providing for, or, you know, because I think it's easy to say, well, I love my kid. But how are you treating them? How do you make them feel? So I can point back to a couple of athletes. One, my all-time favorite, I feel comfortable using his name because it's a positive. His name's Justice Mims. He's a freshman at Hope College. He's on the basketball team, their Division III player. You know, I got to meet Justice as a sophomore, and he had a lot of work to do. And, you know, the thing about his parents is they were eternally positive, but honestly, they always believed he could get better. You know, even on days he had bad days, they said, yeah, you know, it wasn't his best. He can get better. And they always held him to a high standard as a person. You know, I never had to worry about him being a great teammate. I never had to worry about him being on time. If I corrected their son, I never had to worry about, you know, it being awkward walking past him in the hallway. They, you know, it's just different when you have that type of parental support. So when you talk about being that parent for your child, you know, he was their fifth boy, and he was the youngest. So a trend I found, and something definitely I think is interesting to talk about, especially with these parents who have multiple kids, by the time they get to the youngest ones, they've learned to let off the reins.
Right.
It does not work. It is not fun. And it does not breed the results you think it would by controlling, berating. And you almost look back for these younger siblings. They have it the best because they can play freely. They have the blueprint from seeing their older siblings, you know, the work ethic, right, you know, the structure. But essentially, you want kids who, when they walk past the basketball, soccer ball, or any type of lacrosse stick, do they pick it up on their own, or do they pick it up because dad said you have to do your 1 hour workout, or mom said? So I'll pause there.
Yeah. You mentioned some things like being on time, being a good teammate.
Yeah.
You think you could name like the top 3, 4, 5 of off the court qualities that you see that makes the greatest athletes on the team? Do you see something consistently, like, a guy shows up on time every day, it means he's going to be this? What do you think? Because as a parent, I might not be able to teach my kid how to shoot a 3-pointer because I don't know, but I can teach them how to be on time. What were those qualities that a parent could instill in an athlete that that's off the court definitely plays a role in his life and as an athlete? What are those things that you see make a standout athlete?
I'm glad you asked because, you know, I'm a firm believer that great teams are made of great teammates, mm-hmm. and great teammates are simply great people. So, or good people, however you want to phrase that. But that is the starting point or the building block of any strong program, in my opinion. And at Rochester Adams, I think we did not have the freedom to make our run and to have the success we had until we learned that having a healthy locker room and having a team full of great teammates is more important than having a really talented team. This team we had this past year was not our most talented team. It was honestly a team that I was really concerned about to start the year. We just were not very good. And to see us go on the run we had was simply because we weren't afraid to fail. And we had kids who were genuinely happy for the success of others ahead of them. And I have many, many stories to account for that. But back to what you said, some of the main characteristics. Are you trustworthy? Can I trust you to be on time? Can I trust you to show up? Are you coachable? When I coach you, do you give eye contact? How is your body language? And when I say body language, is your demeanor down? You know, are you looking away? Do you look disinterested in what I have to say? Respectful. Do you, when I coach you, do you respond with some type of, you know, yes, I've heard you, or no, I don't understand. How do you talk to others? I mean, this is a big thing. We want the last guy on our team, so the least talented guy on our team, to be able to correct the most talented guy on our team. So that takes a level of humility. And then the last thing I say is genuinely happy and invested in the success of others. That is the hardest one. When you have it, you know it. And when you don't have it, you just wish you had it. So if parents could look at some of those things and say, what if I focus my effort and energy into holding my kid into being on time, coachable, respectful, great teammate? When he's on the bench, I want to know what his body, you know, I've had a lot of parent meetings over the years. None of them were about, man, my kid can be a better teammate. But that is so important. You know, that is so important. And I would say those are some of the characteristics, and those things travel into every aspect of life. And I say they're so important because if a kid is good enough, he's going to play. Every coach I know, they want to win. If it's neck and neck, yeah, sure. Maybe someone will play ahead of them. Or even if the kid is a little bit better, but not substantially better, yeah, you know, you're going to have, you know, maybe you don't agree with the playing time the coach gives, but your kid is good enough, they're going to play. So the skills in basketball, shooting, dribbling, passing, decision-making, rebounding, defense, I mean, there's a million of them. Let your coaches or their trainers, you know, by all means, let them focus on that. And as a parent, you know, you focus on the other part. I think you have something really powerful.
Yeah, I think I probably know the answer to this question, but I'll ask it. Is there ever any value in a parent during a game trying to coach their kid from the stands instead of the bench? I played basketball in high school, not at your level, and I had friends, parents yelling at them the entire game. Oh, this box out. I'm like, man, I know the way in the locker room and talking to my buddy, how that made him feel. Could you encourage the parents that is or is not a good idea?
Yeah, I would completely stay away from it, 100%. If you watch, see, in coaching, I've gotten to see a lot of coaches. I've got to coach other coaches' kids. So this is a funny thing. I've coached NBA players' kids. I've coached college coaches' kids. I mean, high level. I mean, people who know a lot more about basketball than I do. I mean, they live it, and they've lived it since before I was born, I think. So people are way more experienced than I am. When they come to the games, they do not say a word. They do not say a word. It doesn't mean they don't at home have film sessions or have their own feedback. But when they come to the games, they do not say a word. And I think that's interesting to me because they totally could. You know, I'm sure they would have some feedback that would be helpful. But they know that on the playing field or the court, you need to be locked into what's being asked of you from the bench. And out of respect to who's coaching and out of respect to the team, those are just boundaries that should not be crossed. If you want to yell and cheer, great. You know, if you have, you know, reaction to, you know, I can't tell anyone to sit there and be silent. It is a game. But the moment you're now coaching your kid, I think you've crossed the boundary of respect. And I think you have a decision to make on, do I trust the coach and what he's teaching? Do I trust the team or do I not? And if you do not, I think you should remove your kid.
Yeah. I'm glad that's the answer, because I think that that's super important. Even in life, maybe we can shift outside of basketball. You've got a brand new baby. So you're still in the, you know, for the next 5 years, you're going to tell them what to do. And it's because I said so. And then after like 5 years old, when they can now communicate, you really move out of, I'm telling you what to do, to you're starting to coach. And coaching is say, please, say, thank you, say, please, say, thank you, do this, do that. And then they go out into the world and you tell them, they do, you see them succeed or fail. And then that's when the coaching is after. And I found the most successful coaches prepare in the house or in the gym, however you want to call it. And then they go out and then they just are making course corrections. Is that your coaching style? I mean, how do you see that playing out in life, maybe in work, in other places? How do you see coaching, the style of coaching, affecting leadership in the future, like outside of the basketball court?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. And, you know, one that, you know, I think styles are adjusting now. Like, I think that the olden days of coaches just demanding, with very little player feedback. I think most coaches now are adapting to that. You know, I have players on my team at different stages in their career, and I could say that my juniors and seniors who have experience, I'm very prone, and I'm even asking for their feedback and prodding for their feedback. But essentially, we have a rule. You know, players show up on time, ready to practice, and coaches come prepared, ready to work on the right things. So my job is to make sure we're working hard at the right things. Now, a course correction, I want your feedback. You know, I want to know what's working, what feels good, what looks good. And those are things throughout a game we'll talk about all the time. You know, we're in this defense, or maybe I'm set play calling too heavy. My players, they know that they can let me know, coach, we're calling too many plays. You know, we need to just play more freely, because that's a big thing. That's a part of our success. And I think parents maybe could benefit from knowing this. We try to get out of our head. We call it playing green. We want to be free of thought and fully immersed in our habits and training and culture. And that's not something you can do, I think, early in this. It's not something you can do until you learn what is needed of you. But once you learn and have good habits, we really want to get out of our own heads and be able to play. So me constantly feeling, you know, speaking, you know, constantly talking in there, constantly, you know, over coaching, and then parents from the sideline over, I think you really can get in their way. Because if you think of the greatest performances ever, and you can ask yourself this, when was your best game, or when was your best moment? And then someone asks you, well, what were you thinking about? You probably say nothing. You know, right. I was fully trusting it was an awesome, it was an out of body experience. That's what we want.
So. Yeah, that's awesome. Going back a little bit to getting kids prepared for high school basketball or high school sport.
Yep.
What do you think about multi-sport athletes? Is that a good thing? Do they need to focus? What are your takes on that? Letting kids play. Yeah.
I think they're young. You know, youth sports. You know, you're talking kindergarten through eighth grade. I think once you get to high school, you know, it's still a youth sport, but the high school academic arena, some things do change. It does get more competitive. I will say that. But the youth sports, definitely multiple sports. How many? I don't know. You know, two, three. You know, whatever you want to do. I think it's really important if your kid is really good at a sport. Let's say your kid is really good at baseball, and maybe they're not great at soccer. You know, make them play soccer, because they need to know what it feels like to not be the best, or for something not to come easy to them. So not only play multiples, there's a million health reasons. There's a million, you know, reasons to build a better athlete or to build a more well-rounded athlete. You can say that till you say it as long as you want. I mean, and all of it is true. I mean, you can look at the science, but I would say also kids have to learn how not to be the best at their sport, because it will help them. So I'm a big fan of that. And when they get to high school, you know, freshman, sophomore year, I see a lot of kids play multiple sports, and you know, as the time they get to junior, senior year, some of them may dwindle it down to one or two, and that's completely their choice. The one thing I would say, every coach screams multi-sport athletes. I agree with it, but I think you should only play as many sports as you can manage. I mean, I see some kids play three sports and they don't get much playing time in any of the sports. Right. And then academically, they're running around like a chicken with their head cut off most of the school year. And they're just so busy for the sake of being busy. And I don't know if I agree with that.
Right.
But if you can play them successfully and you can manage your academics and your some type of social life because you need one of those two, go for it.
Give a dad some advice for maybe an athlete who really wants to succeed at a high level, doesn't have the physical ability to do it. He's not going to make the team. How do you, because I'm sure you experienced that. You're a big, you know, it's a fairly large school for a small Division I, but a big school. How do you help a parent to have that conversation? Hey, your kid is awesome. He has the drive. He has it, but he is 4'7". You know, like right now, yeah, he's not making it. Because you don't want to crush their dreams, especially if they're young. There's a freshman. He might be able to make it by senior year. What's that conversation look like? What's the advice? Or maybe this kid is not going to make it unless something substantially changes. How does that help help a dad out? You know, help him give him the words to talk to his kid to get him, you know, so that you don't crush him, especially if the kid really wants it. How does that go down?
Yeah. So there's long answers to that and short answer to that. And I'm going to go somewhere between. So I would say I've never cut a kid because they were too small. I've cut a kid because they were not skilled enough. You know, I've, you know, does it help to be bigger? Yes. And bigger players get away with less skill. They absolutely do. Yeah. But I've never cut a kid because they're too small. I've always cut them because they weren't skilled or tough enough. And toughness does not have to do with size. It has to do with how you compete. So I would tell, you know, a lot of these parents, you know, definitely introducing your kid to sports early is important. Mm-hmm. Allowing your kids to play with people who are better than them is important. So putting them in environments where they're not the best player, even if they have to play with older kids or grown men or whatever, putting them in situations where they are challenged, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally, that is going to breed a tougher player. But when you do that, that comes with a whole other responsibility of belief and support and positive guidance. Because if you throw them in those arenas and you don't equip them with any of the tools to cope or to persevere, they probably won't want to play much longer. And I think the competition needs to be, you know, within range. So if you put them way over their head, you know, that's not going to work.
Right.
If you put them well under their punching weight, you know, that's not. So it's just, you know, putting them in situations where they're constantly having to go up. And if you have a small, if you know your kid's going to be smaller, I think it's even more important. I have a very close friend of mine. He played college basketball. He's All-American, NAIA All-American. And he was starting on varsity at Rochester High School, and he's 4'11" as a freshman. And everyone laughed at him. You know, everyone thought he just was a baby. Right. But eventually grew, I think got to like 5'8", you know, 5'9". And he, you know, but his dad had him playing, I think he said he's in seventh grade. His dad put him in a men's league in Detroit at the St. Cecilia. And he said he didn't score a point the entire season. He got a shot blocked. He got basically humiliated, but he didn't quit. And, you know, no one could question his toughness. No one could question his skill. And again, I think those are things that travel well with kids. You know, I have a kid on my team right now. I mean, he was one of the smallest kids in our program. He weighed 120 pounds, maybe. He was 5'6" going into his junior year. Thankfully, did hit a little growth spurt. He got to like 5'10", but he still only weighed 125 pounds. He was my starting point guard on a state quarterfinal team. No one was tougher. Did physically sometimes just get outworked? Yes, but he also was leading our team in rebounds at one point in the season. He just fought, and his work ethic was unmatched. Like he set a record. There's a gym in the area. It's called Oakland Fieldhouse. He set a record on the shooting machine. He has the most he's put up the most shots out of anyone in the entire, I mean, I think there's hundreds of athletes that train there. His work ethic and his toughness cannot be questioned. Now his size, yeah, you know, we still call him Baby. I won't say his name because I'll leave him out of it, but we still call him Baby first name because he's a little guy, but man, he was the kid who hit the game winning three for us. We were down 7 with a minute to go. And I thought we're going to be in trouble. And he hit the game winning three for us. And it was just such a testament of his work ethic. And as his dad celebrated in the crowd and was crying, you know, he had to be crying because he understood his son was always overlooked. His son put in the work. And hopefully that moment of him hitting that shot is not the final benefactor of his work. You know, you want that to pay multiple times over in his life to say, I can be maybe not the biggest or maybe not the fastest or the strongest, but I can work with the tools I'm given and still be successful. And that is what I would encourage a parent to focus on.
That's awesome. So what I hear you saying is that your most successful athletes control the things they can control, showing up on time, working hard, being dedicated, being tough, putting in the time, being willing to fail. Am I missing anything?
No. And no, I think those are the things that they do well. And if they didn't do those things, they wouldn't have a chance. So I think you have to reverse engineer that as a parent and say, these are the things we have to do well because we can do them well.
Right.
Anything beyond that, you can't control. You know, that kid, is he ever going to play Division I basketball? Even if that was his biggest dream in life, I wouldn't count him out. I mean, I'll give him a chance. I mean, if you really want it, go for it. My job as your coach is not to project where you'll finish up. My job is to believe in you. So go for it. Now, is it likely? I don't see many others out there. And I think the truth is, you have to understand that at some point in this game, whether your goals make the NBA or Division I or what, all these things are just really difficult feats. You're not going to get what you want on the court. You're not going to get everything you want on the court. And, you know, I look at LeBron James, he has 4 rings and it probably just kills him that he doesn't have 5 or 6 or 7. And there's nothing he can do about it. He can set up all these teams. He can do all these things. But the truth is, a lot of things have to go well for you to win and to get these scholarships and to get these things. So if a player is not physically gifted, at some point that may catch up to them in a sport. But man, look at what they will gain. And I think as far as high school sports, I've never seen a kid not succeed in high school because they weren't big enough. I've seen it because they weren't skilled enough or tough enough.
That's encouraging. I think I think some dads out there need to hear that. That one, if your kid wants it, he can get it.
Yeah.
Is the NBA in his future? It'd be a lot of hard work. But that's, you know, there's what, 300 players in the NBA?
Maybe. Yeah.
Out of all the men in the United States of America and the world, they're picking, you know, 0.00001%. But that's encouraging that you don't have to have all the physical skills and you can still make it. I think that's awesome.
Absolutely. And I think that's something, you know, has to be decided, you know, with your kids before they start. Like, what are we doing this for? Why am I putting my kid in a sport? If it's for my kid to make it to the NBA or to do X, Y, and Z, you know, I think, Be careful, because for every NBA draft story you see of a kid, you know, we believed in it, we trained since he was 8 years old. Those relationships are not all rainbows and butterflies to start with. I'll say that one too. But how many did not make it, and where did those kids get left? Not just physically, but mentally and emotionally, because I see a lot more of those. And, you know, if your kid is projected to go to the NBA and is playing in the, like this past week, there's the NBA top 100 camp for high school players. If your kid is in the NBA top 100 camp and you're like, I want my kid to make it to NBA, I support you. You know, I get it. I understand. But if your kid is, you know, 8 years old and has a love for the game of basketball and loves watching NBA, it's okay to say that's a goal. You know, I think it's good to have goals and it's good to aspire to more. But as soon as that becomes, you know, your focus or your expertise, if that's the reason you're playing a sport is to make it to the NBA, I think, again, you have to look back at why you're doing it. Because once you make it there, what now? And that's what I always say to people. If our goal, guys, and I told the kids this year with our season. I think this is a great token for parents as well. Our goal this year, we've never won a regional championship in school history. And every year with my teams at Adams, that was our goal. We're going to win a regional championship. We're going to win a district championship, all these things. You know, we won the district championship the year before, and there was almost zero joy, no joy, because we didn't play together. And this was my first district championship as a coach. And I remember after the game, I was just so embarrassed with how we played. I was not happy. I was embarrassed by how we played. And, then we go into the regional game and, you know, our goal is to win this regional championship. And when we didn't, you know, it was hard. I mean, it was a hard low for me, and I'm an adult, you know, I've been through things, and these kids, you know, it's a hard low for them. I think, something a lot healthier to set your focus on is being the most improved team or the most improved person. So if we say most improved team, I tell my guys, we don't have to worry about the result, because we just want to be the most improved team. And that means if you win, we have to find ways to get better through film. And we'll be in a film session. We won a game by 15, 20 points. And the kids are like, hey, like, no, like most improved team. Like, we can still learn. Like, we can still get better. If we lose, hey, most improved team. And we took that mantra. And I stood there in the regional semifinal after we beat Milford, and we had to play Clarkston again for the third time that year. I just told our kids, I said, between Tuesday and Thursday, we don't need to worry about winning a regional championship. We need to worry about being the most improved team. Who can we get better, you know, between now and Thursday? And when you lock into the things you can control and the things you can do, everything else is an extension of that. And it just takes the unnecessary pressure, because even once you win a district, well, now you want to win a region. Once you win a region, you want to go to the Final Four. Then you want to win a state championship. And a good friend of mine, Tim Morton, he said, we won a state championship. It felt good, he said, for about one day.
Yeah.
And then they had to talk about winning the next one and the next one. And that's just something that I think if you look into, I mean, that's just all we do is compare. Bank accounts, relationships, all types of things. And it's really something you're never going to aspire. You know, like, you're never going to scratch that itch. It's always going to be another thing. So why do you do what you do? It can't be based on a result. It has to be based on something internal. You're growing, you're getting better.
Man, I love that. That is, mm-hmm. I mean, sports is, I think the reason people like sports is because it's an analogy for life. And what you described to me is how you live a successful life. Control the things you can control. You know, there's always something more. You can always get more. If you can be happy with what did I do? Did it line up with my goals, my dreams, you know, my priorities? Man, I'm living a good life. I don't have to worry about the next thing. I think that is awesome. As we wrap up, is there anything I didn't ask you'd like to say?
I'd like to talk a little bit just about this mindset of tough love and motivation. Mm-hmm. I think tough love and motivation does not always return the results that we would expect, or I see parents expect. You know, they're pushing their kid maybe more than they should, or saying things to their kid maybe more than they should, because they want to motivate them and they want them to be great. And I believe that's true. They do want to motivate them and they do want them to be great. But I just want to bring some awareness that there's another side to that. You know, and sometimes, you know, I've seen athletes who do become great or do become good at their sport. There's not an appreciation there. It's a resentment and it scars that, you know, they remember how they were treated when they weren't great. And think about having to sustain that for your entire life. You know, so nothing is good enough unless you're the best. You know, I've had kids with 3.9 GPAs tell me they're not smart. I've had kids who know they can't amount to their parents. So essentially, they resort to other things. I think, you know, it's just really important to treat your kids with respect and dignity. And if you're going to hold them, if you're going to have tough love on anything, be tough about them showing up on time. Be tough about who they are as people. Be tough about them being great teammates and having a strong work ethic and their character and their attitudes. Be tough on that, because that will travel and they will respect that. But if you're being tough on them because they're striking out or they're missing free throws, that's one of the free throws, they're free. You know, if free throws were free, If free throws were free, you wouldn't shoot them. They miss them in the NBA. They miss them in college. They're going to miss them in high school.
Yeah.
And I just am tired. They're free. They're not free. They're a shot, and they can go in or they can go out. And no kids I know are trying to miss them. So, you know, that mindset, you know. And I think, you know, I would feel good if most dads or moms could just understand that when your kid is done playing sports, they're going to remember how you made them feel. They're going to remember your belief in them. And again, even if sports did not click for them, they are going to find that thing they're good at in life. And hopefully they'll look back and they'll be thankful and they'll have grown from their sports experience instead of harboring a lot of feelings of maybe unrealistic expectations. You know, I've seen kids belittled, really challenged at the core of who they are, and they deal with it as adults. So some of them are not over it. I mean, a lot of coaches coach because they're not over it. they're not over it. Whatever happened to them in high school, they're not over it. And I would just say we all need to heal from that. Kids should play sports because they're fun. Kids should play sports because they can grow as people and do incredible things. I sent a couple of pictures to you. One of them was my team after we won the regional championship, to see the joy on their faces. You couldn't tell who was a starter. You couldn't tell who was a bench player. You couldn't tell because everyone just looked so elated. It's not like that on every team. And I think you have to create that type of culture. And I'm not an expert at that. I'm learning about that. And I think if I'm going to have future success as a coach, it is because I know how to create a healthy environment for my team to succeed or fail. So as a parent, you need to create a healthy home environment for your kid to succeed or fail, because it's not about the results, not about the stat sheet. It's about your kid growing, being a good person, and anything they get out of it is just extra. Man, there's a book called What Drives Winning, and it's a workbook. So some of these mental tools we talk about, believe it or not, you can go a whole season and not invest anything mentally in your kids. You can say you're building a work ethic. You can say you're building their confidence. You know, once a week we step off the court and we'll do a personal growth session. And there's a workbook called What Drives Winning. You know, I didn't want to keep making up these sessions because they get, you know, just like imagine Sunday school after a while, like, you know, you got to have a curriculum. So, you know, I started working through these workbooks and, you know, it's amazing what 15, 20 minutes a week can do over the course of a season.
So guys, I think this was an awesome conversation. Jared, I really appreciate you being here. Guys, if you got something out of it, I'm asking for two things. One, if you like this and thought it was good, share it with someone that needs it. And two, go out and earn your title every day. Remember, you can't be a husband, father, or leader unless someone gives you that title. So you got to earn it. Jared, I think you gave us some great information to help us do it. Take us one step closer as leaders, as coaches, as fathers. So thank you so much. And I can't wait to talk to you again. See you.
Take care.